Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here are your hosts, the one and only Dr. Payray and the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Holy cow, we made it. We made it to the new
We've already started.
I'm kind of a live guy. You know that. Did you want to talk about things and like figure out what we're talking about?
I was going to. I've already got it all written down.
T-Bone's got a list over here.
Then I'm going to let you lead anyway.
Yeah. So all right, everybody. I've got a special program for everybody. It's a proud day for me. I've got to be honest with you. I have a almost like a little brother here in Sully. Almost like a big brother here in Rick.
I was thinking you're more the granddad here.
And Uncle. Today is the grand opening of Sullivan Dental Partners' long-term vision of their new building. And I want to talk about how we got here, the process, what steps have been part of this along the way. Because a lot of times what happens is we don't recognize the steps of the journey until we reach a destination, because we don't know what we're doing as we're doing it. It isn't until we get to the end that we can take a look back and see what we've done. But to give everybody some context, this is how crazy this weekend is. They closed their office on Friday.
A week ago.
Yes. Today is Thursday.
Yeah, we're good. Okay.
Yeah, we need help with what day it is right now.
I came in yesterday, which is a Wednesday, and they're moving into the new building, which is a couple hundred feet away, which makes it a little bit easier. They have a photo shoot going on. We're setting up the training center, and we're hosting two classes on Thursday, Friday, and then another one on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all on the same weekend. The building is a beautiful. It's 11,000 square feet dedicated to dentistry. It houses three unique things in here. We house a general dental practice on the first floor. We house a surgical center designed for large case surgical dentistry on the second floor. And we house a conference room training center on the second floor as well. So there's some unique aspects of that that maybe doesn't apply to everybody. But what I want to do is that we work on building the dream. And the overall message, I think, is sometimes we hold our dreams back because of flexibility issues. And if we test and experiment and prove the concept before we start building, we can then find that we can execute our dreams at a higher level. So before we talk about the building, let's take a step back, and we are joined by Dr. Rick Sullivan, which is Richard Sullivan III, correct? And before Sully talks, we don't want Sully to talk at all yet. Rick, give us your story briefly, okay, about you as a dentist pre-Sully.
Got out of school in 1988. My dad was killed in a hunting accident in 1987, my senior year in dental school.
And your dad was a dentist?
Dad was a dentist, had a very successful practice. In 1987, he had three assistants, three hygienists working on six chairs.
By himself.
In Linda Miles' first book, she referred to my dad as the rabbit on roller skates. When she talks about the way different dentists work. Okay. I get it, honestly, Sully.
Yeah, I was going to say, this explains a lot, actually.
Anyway, when I got out of dental school, some of my father's friends, study club people, had kind of kept the practice going. By volunteering their time, and I spent most of my senior year up here actually working in the practice under their guidance, which means they were reading the paper in the office and I was practicing.
To keep the practice going.
To keep the practice going when I actually graduated. So I brought the practice, actually about half of it, had a partner by the other half. We were together 2 or 3 years, and he kind of went his own special ways, and that was an amicable thing. So I bought the building that we were currently just left in 1993 and grew it from two hygienists, one assistant, up to, when Sully got there in 2015, I had five chairs, three hygienists, two assistants, two up front. And I was running about $1.5 million a year by myself. I offered oral sedation. I did everything except any kind of orthodontics. Oral sedation, I did all my third molars, always have. Offered Lenap. I restored implants. I'd dabbled in placing them years ago, but frankly, I'd gotten so busy that I had time. I struggled to make for the scheduling, which where a lot of the stuff we've done now with the block scheduling stuff has fixed all that. I really needed an associate probably 7 or 8 years before Sully got out of school. But at the time, I was concerned with how am I going to split my practice? How's this going to work? How am I going to divide the practice in half? Really had no idea exactly what that was going to look like other than my son's graduating in 3 months. So we went down to the Hinman in March of 15, ended up coming back with 8 chairs, 8 operatories, remodeled the office, and he got out of school in June. And we started, and we just kind of started working together, and he started implementing ideas.
So I think that's a good place. So that kind of gives us the story of where we got, you know, where we were at. Okay. So you're in 2,700 square feet. You had grown it to 8 operatories by adding walls here and there. You bought all new equipment because you had your son going in with you. And you're doing about 1.4, 1.5 million in collections, which is an amazing number.
But I was also burnout.
Yeah.
He will tell you that.
Yeah, you were working hard.
I was working hard.
It's amazing how like his growth, looking back, was so stunted by busyness.
Yeah. And I'll talk about this at DS World a little bit, but it's some of us substitute busyness instead of business. And it's a single letter change, but it's a big difference. So what was your fear about bringing in, let's not just call it an associate. It happens to be your son. What was your biggest fear there?
How am I going to split it up? How am I going to still make my monthly payments? How am I going to make my mortgages and my monthly commitments by suddenly having half the, you know, and technically half the patients, half the workload? What's it going to look like?
Okay. And would you say that a lot of your contemporaries and colleagues face that same fear and challenge?
I'd be shocked if they didn't.
Yeah. And I think the main difference there was you felt a level of force because it was your son, correct?
On some level, exactly.
Yeah. So it's not like you could say, oh, well, you know, maybe I just won't do an associate because, you know, you have a number one, you're third generation dentist. There's Richard Sullivan the first, Richard Paul Sullivan the second, Richard Sullivan the third, and there should be Richard Sullivan the fourth, all in the same, you know, in the same practice. There's no reason for Sully to go somewhere else. What was Sully's first 6 months and year like? How did he enter into the practice? Was it very similar to probably what most associates do?
I would say so. Basically, we had him start checking hygiene. And he started out in August of that year.
Diagnosing every etch.
Diagnosing every etch. Probably did over 100 MODs or two surface fillings that August. More than he'll ever do again in his life total. And we would sit every afternoon in the office and kind of co-diagnose cases. We would take photographs. We would take x-rays and would go up and... And
that was huge.
On some level, he let me mentor him and say, okay, this is what you did. We would, I would open up a class 2 or whatever and take an interval photograph. And he would do the same thing. He would say, okay, where's the decay? Did you get it all? Should you have done a crown there? That's why you got a pulp exposure. That's why you didn't. Let's walk through the day, almost a debrief.
And how much time did this take?
30 minutes, maybe.
Yeah.
45. We would do it during the day. We need to make more of that time now. Yeah, well, we'll both tell you that.
Because
we're doing
it again. You know, the building robbed a lot of time this past year with Megan, and she's been a trooper because a lot of our mentoring that we would have liked to have done, we haven't done as much, but we have to get back at that now with the fourth doctor coming.
So again, I'm sitting here talking to Dr. Rick Sullivan and Sully Sullivan, and we're talking about their journey over the last 5.5, 6 years from being a solo practitioner to into a new 11,000 square foot building now. And I think what you just said, Rick, is so important, is that you forced a debrief on a daily basis to calibrate each other.
Calibrate's a really good word.
And to mentor Sully about the culture, your clinical. You see, there's two cultures in a practice. There's a business and personal culture. In other words, you know, whether you're fun, whether you wear white coats or don't wear white coats.
Exactly.
Whether you're in scrubs, whether you shaved every day, whether you're a tie.
Whether you had a man bun.
Yeah, man. You know, whether you know, just the culture. Like when somebody walks into your office, they sense a culture from how your team treats everybody, the personality, okay, of your practice. And then there's a clinical culture. Are you just letting patients dictate what type of treatment you do? Or are you diagnosing ideal dentistry? Are you over-diagnosing dentistry? There's a clinical culture. And that time of spending 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes each day, that first 3 to 6 months is formative of establishing a clinical culture. Formative. And I think a lot of times we say, oh, I'll get to that, or we'll get there when, you know, when so-and-so takes time off my plate. And it's probably too late at that point. And that's super important. Okay. So Sully was doing, why do you guys laugh about how many MODs he was doing at the very beginning?
Because he wasn't calibrated. And he'll tell you he was diagnosing every etch. He was trying to be busy. Okay. And, you know, the calibration led to, we started planning. Okay, here's your case tomorrow. How are you going to prep this tooth? What's it going to look like? Okay, this is extraction. That are you comfortable doing this? Okay, let's try it. You'll do it. But Dad, you're here.
Well, what happened too was I would, you know, I was diagnosing every, I wasn't, you know, in dental school, it's like if there was any sort of triangle that was an enamel, it was like that needs a filling, you know, and so understanding, you know, being able to look back at stuff and know, is it changing? Is it not changing? Has it crossed the DEJ? And then the other laughter part of it is that, you know, 25-30% of those fillings that I did in July and August, I was redoing in September and October, you know, because you just don't know.
Well, tell me more about that. Tell me more
great
about
technique.
How, why would they need to be redone? I mean, you're not even seeing them on recall yet.
You know, well, right. I know. That's just seeing the ones that were supposed, that were sensitive, right? So, you know, I think for me, one of the biggest things I struggle with out of the gate, and it's been so funny being now in the opposite position of having, you know, new doctors come work with us, is one, there's just the sensitivity of having good bonding protocol and keeping things isolated and stuff like that. You know, I when I got out, I was like, well, I don't want to use a rubber dam anymore. And, you know, I don't want to use any isolation, and understanding just the importance of that. And then the bigger one, which I still see today that, you know, impacts all of us so much on a daily basis, is just occlusion. You know, I had no idea what kind of ramifications a high filling could have on a patient. And these patients would come in, they'd have no symptoms. I'd tell them they needed a DO, you know, 3 MOs or DOs, whatever. I'd do them, and next thing you know, they're hurting, they're calling back, and I'm like, what am I doing? I would go in there and I would look at it. We'd take an x-ray, everything would look great. I may even redo it. And I'm like, what the heck am I doing? They're still hurting. And then Dad would go in there and mark it. They'd have them go into like excursive, you know. Or
wait, what's that?
I know, right? Some sort of other movement than just biting down directly on the
while
paper.
While you're numb.
And I would start to see these marks and see things. And then I would see like, oh my gosh, the patients would just, like a light bulb went off of that, fixed it. It feels better now, you know, and then those things. And we still see that, you know, how, like I was very quick. Megan was very quick. Jackson's being very quick to be like, I think this tooth needs root canal, you know, because they're responding to symptoms post-treatment. It's like, well, no, not necessarily. It's just because there may be some other factor to it. So that's the laughing part, is how many of those, you know, and there were times where Dad had to redo them, right? I would lose patient confidence. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at if I didn't have someone who was willing to kind of work with me through that, those periods of me not being that clinically, you know, good, right.
But also, Sully was not afraid to come and ask for help. And that's a big deal. Say, hey, I can't find this canal.
Oh, I'd be in the middle of a root canal and be like, well, I either refer it out or I go refer it to my partner or, you know,
or
boss.
Or he's stuck on a root tip or can't get a patient numb. And rather than sit there and just spin his wheels, it became a teaching moment.
Yeah, and he wouldn't shame me either. Like, what were you thinking getting into this molar root canal?
Which is, by the way, unique, because it's not unique in the traditional dent owner associate relationship, but it's maybe unique in the dad son relationship. Now, I want to step back for a second, Rick, because this is, as you were telling the story, it hit home because I've dealt with this, and I know a lot of our listeners have dealt with this. Is you're busy doing dentistry, like your own patient base, your own everything. And here we got Yahoo over here, you know, doing diagnosing every little thing and doing it and maybe not doing it well. How'd you even know this was happening? Did your team come to you? What was that dynamic like?
Well, part of it is we were in a 2,000 square foot building, so you kind of knew when somebody took a deep breath. You know, I would have teammates. Sully would come to me and say, hey, I'm concerned about this. Sometimes some teammates would say, hey, ask him about this patient, or the patients would call back and say, hey, you know, I'm sensitive, or just trickle down things. You wanted a pulse on your practice, because right. I'm concerned, who is this person now that's suddenly treating my patients that, you know, that my dad saw, that I saw, that some of them saw my granddad. So they're family patients to me. And that's something I still have
struggle
with on some level sometimes.
What advice would you give the non-father-son person listening about how to handle that period of bringing in the new dentist associate first 6 months?
Stay in their lane. They're a doctor. They're graduated. They have a license. They need to do what they feel comfortable with. Try not to do anything that's irreversible. And let them learn. The experiences where I had to come in and find a root canal, get a root tip out, get somebody numb, whatever, those are the most valuable learning lessons.
Well, and it's funny because even now with Megan, like I kind of have a unique situation in that I was the associate not very long ago, right? And now I get to be on the other side a little bit. And, you know, with Megan, especially over this past year, because she's now been in a year as an associate with us, you know, there were moments where like your dad kind of, I think, has forgot a little bit of when I was so brand new, and he'll want to jump in. I'm like, hey, you know, we got to let her fail.
Yeah, we got to make it safe to fail.
Right. And not in a way of like, if she, like there were
not other, catastrophic failures.
Bingo. Right. Yeah. But like, we got to let her try this material or work through this. We got to let her, because if we just tell her everything, she'll never.
It's adversarial then.
Correct. Exactly. And I think that's been huge. Because what happens, they come around, and they come around to some stuff. And guess what? We come around to some stuff, you know, because we even him doing it 30 years, you doing it as long as you have, and me doing it now for, you know, a little bit of time. You can't be afraid to learn something from someone that's new. And so, you know, she's taught us things, or, you know, introduced new concept or new ideas that we've even implemented, you know, by having that kind of open-minded of like, hey, I'm willing, let's have this willingness to learn from each other.
Well, you know, you stay in your lane, stay in your hula hoop, and don't try to micromanage and microcontrol everything. Be available when asked for help, but don't try to jump in there places where you're not.
What would you have done if Sully didn't ask for help? Because I've been in that situation where they're not asking for help. Well, and I know a lot of my colleagues have been in that. Our colleagues have been in that situation where they don't have somebody asking
for help. Well, at some point, every dentist is going to hit a rock bottom type scenario where they're going to need some help on something. Okay. They're going to have a patient that leaves, a patient that's upset. You know, worst case scenario, they're going to have a patient that files a lawsuit or does some like a peer review thing. So, I mean, you've got to be willing to let, you know, you don't want it to go to that. And hopefully they're not doing that kind of stuff. That's a little bit extreme. But they really have to kind of, the same way if I'm a solo practitioner and open up by myself, I'm going to have to work my way through things.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is that, is like, did dad, because he was my dad, did he allow me to fail more than typically we would let someone else fail on our own patients? And did that show us a light or give us help? And now with someone who's not a Sullivan, letting her fail more because we kind of saw the, like, because it's hard for me to like to know, like, well, how much are you letting your associates fail or micromanage, or are they just really not asking for help?
But I think it's, I think
it's more than not asking for help. Ones I've struggled with aren't asking for help.
And
I do believe in autonomy.
Maybe we're doing a good job too of like making that like being upfront with saying like
culture.
The number one,
you're making a culture.
Right, the number one thing I need from my associate is I need them to be able to ask for help and willingness
to be teachable.
If you can be teachable,
but I think that starts with also the fact that you guys are all in the same private office.
It's a very unique thing that a lot of dentists don't do.
You know, like we're all in our, we're all together.
But a lot of practices, the lead doc has their own private office and all the associates are in like a...
And that's not, I don't think that's a great culture. All right. So...
But the lead doctor has to make it safe for when the associate and the junior doctors do need help, it needs to be a welcoming, comforting type environment.
Not a dental school environment.
Absolutely. And the problem is, so many of us come out of dental school, we're so jaded.
We want to have that. What do fraternities do? The hazing period,
exactly.
or that teasing period, or you know that grand rounds mentality where you're just kind of testing everybody. And
but it's so easy to react. Yeah. It's so easy for when that new doc comes in, and they're like, I just perfed the molar, and you've got a phone call of a patient pissed off. You got to go check hygiene. You got a patient numb in the chair waiting for
and
the
you're
crown.
Busy and you're like, right. God, where am I going to put this patient?
And now,
in my schedule?
And I'm like, dadgummit, what the heck were you doing the molar? Like, it's so easy to snap and react like that. And then you kill that trust and whatnot. So I think that's the hard part is when that happens, being able to say, you know, make it a teachable moment and not react like that.
The other thing that we've learned is we put the most experienced assistants, the most trained assistants, yeah, with the younger doctor. And we tell the younger doctor, I understand you're a doctor.
Did Sully tell you that idea? Because he probably stole it from me.
Oh, that was a dad idea.
It was a dad idea. But the younger doctor needs to understand, if Darlene gives you an instrument, use it. Because she's seen me do that wisdom tooth 8,000 times, and she knows that instrument is the key to getting this out. You may have never seen it before. Do something with it. Yeah. And be willing to let
And he had to sacrifice that. The assistant that he used for 20 years was the assistant I had, and she's now with Magna.
You know, and we do that in our office as well, is that we put, in our office is Whitney number one. We try to put them with our associate as much as possible. And then I like working with the other assistants as well, because the side benefit of that is you're training them up. You're getting to see where they're weak, where they're not as strong, any number of things. And then the other thing is when we do flip-flop assistants, you know, like I start thinking like, okay, why was she not handing me this? Or why was she doing this? And it gives me an opportunity to talk to the dentist. Hey, I noticed that when we were bonding something, like,
you didn't use a bonding agent.
You know, or you the bonding agent was sitting out from before when the patient came in, you know, and it just
they're blowing water, they're washing off the bonding agent.
Any number of silly things, right? Yeah. Nothing that egregious in my office. But it gives me that ability. I think as a senior doc, it's good for me to as much as I complain about having to do basic dentistry, there's some benefit of me seeing how that's being done in our practice as a business owner. But I think this is a good opportunity to keep moving along the timeline here. Okay. So we had a fear of bringing Sully in. We didn't have much of a choice. Okay. So that's a unique and blessing to you guys that you didn't have a choice, because let me ask you this. Would you be where you're at today without having brought him in?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And you think that's because he's your son? Well, I think part of that is because he's your son, but I think ultimately you would definitely be in a better place having had anyone with you at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. And I actually bypassed up a phenomenal associate, young lady doctor, probably several years prior because I was waiting for him. But I look back now, knowing what I know, she could have come on, grown the practice, hired her, and then we'd have been even more ready for him. Then we'd have been out of that building a lot sooner.
It's interesting you say that. So I want to talk about that, and then we'll move on to the next section here is, we're dealing with that in a couple of people in our mastermind. They're like, I've got a third year dental student. They're from here. They want to move here. I'm going to wait a year. I'm like, you're going to struggle for a year for somebody that may or may not come. Like, you never knew. Sully may have met a beautiful woman and moved somewhere else. Or he may have met a beautiful man. I don't know. I mean, I don't know Sully at that time, but I'm sure he's been a woman. Yeah, and moved somewhere else. And here you would have held yourself back. And I think the other point, which we're going to get into because it proved true on the back end of this, is that bring somebody in and test the waters, you know, and I think when we talk about Magna, that'll be a good time to talk about that.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.